Right, good morning. I want to welcome everyone again to another wonderful Lord's Day that God has blessed us with to worship Him together. And it's not raining, which it was supposed to be, so that's nice. Got a little blank. A bunch of our crew on that quarter is not here today. We had a few of them walked in here last minute. We had 81 last week, by the way, which was amazing. We hadn't probably had that number in well over a year, so wonderful that so many of you are able to be back with us again. This morning I wanted to elaborate a little bit on last week's lesson. We talked about from the text in Mark chapter 10 where Jesus teaches on divorce, and we talked about the fact that we shouldn't divorce. That's not what God wants. It's not in His design and His plan for marriage, but it's one thing to say, yeah, don't divorce, but it's another thing to say, well, how do we do that, right? So this morning we want to talk a little bit about making marriage work. I also wanted to be clear, one thing I should have said last week that I didn't is like, look, there is no sin that cannot be forgiven. Even if something like that has happened in your life, it doesn't mean that there is no way back, that God cannot forgive that sin. It's just a sin like any other sin. And Jesus' blood is powerful to forgive those sins. But we have to be willing to work to make it right going forward, to not engage in those kinds of things again. Now, our title to our lesson this morning really has two meanings. And first, and obviously, is that we need help and biblical wisdom in order to have godly and efficient and working marriages. We have to, if we want to have a marriage that functions properly, we have to work. So in order for that to happen, to have a working marriage, we have to realize that we must turn our marriages into work. They are something we must work on. So we have to make it work by working. Making marriage work. That's what we're going to talk about this morning. So marriage is not something that we enter into lightly. It's something you have to make a commitment to. We make vows when we go into that. As we studied last week, the marriage structure grows and the home grows out of God's very first command to mankind to be fruitful and multiply. Inherent in that command are the husband and the wife, the parent and children relationships. And those relationships are very specific. Genesis 2:24 reads, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." And so when that happens, the child is no longer under the headship of his father and mother, but rather the husband and wife are now joined together as a new autonomous unit with his or her spouse. It is a relationship designed for one man and one woman with the intent of procreation and promoting God. Because that intent is so very important, it's essential for the marriage to fulfill its purpose. And the only way for a marriage to do that is for effort or work to be put into it. And that's why we see the divorce rates, right? Not only in this country, but all around the world, it's skyrocketing. Because people don't realize that marriage is work. They go into it thinking it's just going to be easy. Well, I love this person. What else is there to it? Marriage is not to be taken lightly. Marriage is not easy. We look around and we see facts such as that marriage is considered a success simply if the parents stay together. Wow, you've been married for 20 years? Wow. Forget about happiness or even faithfulness. It's just the fact that they stay together and it's considered a success. It's a pretty low bar. We see that this concept of an effective and happy marriage forged through hard work and by living God-centered lives and building God-centered homes is a concept that is completely lost today, which is bad news for the institution of marriage, even among members of God's church. So if we're going to make marriages work, we have to realize that marriage is work. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. I think a lot of people, work is a bad thing in today's society. We don't want to work. We don't want to put effort into anything. We don't want to take responsibility for anything. We don't want to receive the rewards without putting in any of the work. But work is not a bad thing. God designed work. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 15, man was put in the garden to work it and to keep it. That's the second command given to man. Now, the first command was to be fruitful and to multiply. The second was to work the garden. And the third command was to eat of the fruits of his labor, except for, of course, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But what do you see there? You see this three-step process. You plant something, and then you work to cultivate that. And then once you've done so, then you enjoy the fruits of that labor. It's true in cultivating some sort of plant, and it's also true in any other relationship. It's true in the marriage relationship. You create it, you plant it, then you work at it to cultivate it, and then you enjoy the rewards. But everybody today just wants to skip over the first two parts. They just want to get rewarded. People, we live in an age of entitlement. People just want things to be handed to them. What does this lead to? It leads to a lack of effort, it leads to selfishness, it leads to laziness. When someone works for the things that they have, there's a sense of pride that is developed that causes that person to want to continue to preserve and strengthen that for which they have worked. The same thing applies to marriage. If I take responsibility for it, if I work towards it, then I'm going to take pride in it. And I'm going to want to continue to make sure that it is successful. But people think a great marriage should just be handed to them. That there will be no work required, that, well, you know what? It's going to be easy because I'm in love. It's not going to happen just because you're infatuated with someone when you get married. Guess what? That fades. That feeling fades. And what is left? There has to be a solid foundation for that relationship. Every relationship on this earth demands work or effort. Whether it's parent and child, whether it's teacher and student, whether it's friend to friend, but especially that of the husband and the wife. No other relationship demands so much of each other. And most often difficulties come along in relationships because of selfishness. Because people don't want to fulfill the vows that they made before God. And that's what makes it so hard, right? Because in marriage, we each have a role to play. We each have a part. And I made vows to you, right? So what do I have to do? I have to work to fulfill those vows. And that's on me. That's not on the other partner in the relationship. It's on me to fulfill the vows that I made. Now, it's on them to do their part. But we each have to do our part. And when I'm selfish and when I am lazy and I don't take my friendship and I don't take my relationship seriously, when I don't take my vows seriously, when I think things are just going to be easy, it means I'm not going to put in the work. It means I'm not going to be focused where I ought to be. I want to look at a few verses in the Proverbs here this morning that talk about friendship. And these verses tell us that friendships are forged through adversity. Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." Proverbs 18:24, "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." These are about the friendships that we choose. Well, is marriage not one of those relationships? Proverbs 27:6, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." Sometimes we might have to tell our spouse something that it hurts a little bit. But profuse are the kisses of an enemy. If you just tell your spouse everything's okay when it's not, you just let it fester under the surface. That's unhelpful. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. Same again. I want you to look at all these in the context of marriage. After all, our husband and wife should be our greatest friend. A friend loves at all times. Iron sharpens iron. We ought to be working iron, sharpening iron in the marriage relationship, working to better each other. And that is often meaning that it's going to be forged through adversity. The marriage relationship is better. Ought to be better than a sibling relationship where there is so much adversity. Friendships are rewarding because they take work. The parties involved are willing to say what needs to be said to make the other person better. They are there because they want to be. You're part of a family because you were just born into it. You don't have a choice in that. But when it comes to your friends, when it comes to your spouse, that's someone you chose. And you continue to choose to be there and not walk away. Friends are willing to point out flaws, and yet they still want to be friends. And that's exactly what a marriage is. You know, I think sometimes people don't realize just how lucky they are to be married. Marriage is so denigrated in today's society. Oh, you got the old ball and chain, right? I mean, come on. We were watching, we almost never have to watch commercials anymore, right? Because everything is just streamed. And me and Amber were sitting there the other day, and we were watching some show that required us, travesty of travesties, to watch a commercial in the middle of it. And it was like a commercial for Match.com, you know, online dating. And in today's day and age, it's like you can't even meet up anymore. Now it's like they're like literally like this commercial, these people are like Zoom dating. And you're like, we just look at each other and we're like, I'm so glad I'm not trying to live in that, trying to date in today's world. Like, man, that would be awful. People don't realize how lucky they are to even be married. To the fact that someone knows everything about you and they still want to be with you. I mean, come on. And don't you think you want to work to keep that? Isn't that valuable? Is that something you want? Appreciate it. Don't take it for granted. Work to keep that, because if that is you, you are blessed. You are enjoying one of the most beautiful things that God created from the very beginning of time when He created Adam and Eve. Don't take it for granted. Work for it. Approach marriage with a mind to work. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Well, good grief, shouldn't we approach marriage in that way? Our hand has found it. Why not work at it? So what are some things we should do? We should not expect things of our spouses and not of ourselves. One other one I thought to note there, Proverbs 18:22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing, men. You found a good thing. We shouldn't expect things of our spouses and not of ourselves. One can be willing to do all the work, but if the other isn't, it's not going to work out. One spouse in the relationship should not have to do every chore, should not have to raise all the kids, should not have to make all the concessions, should not have to do everything themselves while the other one sits on the couch watching TV. Number two, God designed marriage to be a benefit to us. Our spouse is to be a friend who makes us better. It enhances our quality of life. It teaches us more about God. It's designed to benefit us, not to detract from our quality of life. And when I say it teaches us more about God, what do I mean by that? I mean, when you look at God and you look at His base character, you look at who He is, and then you apply that to the marriage relationship, you say, how is the husband and wife supposed to treat one another? Well, they're supposed to treat each other with love, with self-sacrifice, with humility, with patience, with forgiveness. Aren't those all things that are baseline what God does? And so when we enact those attitudes in our own relationship with each other, we are teaching each other more about God, and we are also glorifying God. Our marriage is a way of glorifying God. We glorify Him when we work together to fulfill the purpose He has given us in marriage. When we work towards that, when we have a mind to make it better, when we have a mind to be more like God, it's a testament to Him, to His divine wisdom. And it teaches others around us about Him when they see us. And you see, you know, when you hear this, people say, wow, they've been together for 50 years. That's amazing. Well, when someone says that, do you just say, well, yeah, you know, they're really lucky? No, usually the reason they're able to do that and be together for that long is because they are godly. They are Christians. They are committed. They are working towards it. And they say, you know what? It wasn't easy. But we put the work in. And we were focused on Christ. And we loved each other. And we were godly towards one another. And that's not easy. And there are ups and there are downs. But you have to be focused. And you have to be committed. Approach it with a mind to work. People in good marriages tend to be happier and more efficient and more productive, and they have more influence, and they raise godly children. Isn't that what we should want for ourselves? What would the world be like today if all marriages worked as God designed them to? We need to appreciate the joys, not looking at it as something negative, but rather as something positive. Appreciate the joys and the privileges and the blessings of marriage, because it's God's design. Going all the way back to Genesis 2, you look at, you know, the Proverbs 31, and you know, we tend to think about Proverbs 31 as, well, you know, that's the worthy woman chapter. Well, It's not just the worthy woman chapter. Look at what else is in that chapter. It talks about the man honoring his wife and appreciating his wife and her children loving her and appreciating her and glorifying her and telling the rest of the town about how great she is. Well, there's a lesson there for men and children as well. It's a blessing to have a woman who fulfills all those qualities. And so approach it with the intent and the attitude to succeed. You know, I talked about that last week, how one of the best ways to avoid divorce is for it to just not be an option. It never even enters your mind that that's a way out. We need to use the attitudes found in Ephesians chapter 5 of submission and love and cherishing and self-sacrifice and humility and forgiveness and patience. Marriage is work, but it's also a blessing. But when we talk about marriage, we talk about what are some of the problems that arise in marriages? What makes it so difficult? I think ultimately it boils down to these three main things. What causes problems in marriage? Number one, money. Number two, children. And number three, issues with intimacy. And that could be emotional intimacy, spiritual intimacy, physical intimacy. There are different planes of that. But these are the three main problems, right? When it comes to money, whether someone is wasteful or whether they're too tight, whether they hide things from each other, whether there are disagreements, again, coming from selfishness about how to use things. Well, you spend too much money on yourself and don't let me spend enough money. Well, I mean, come on. Whether it's children, how to raise them. How strict are we going to be? Are we raising them with the same religious frame of mind? How much time are we giving to them? Or is the time that we put into them coming between us and our relationship? You know, see, the other day I was out somewhere and I was talking to somebody, and you know, I was talking about how I just had my third kid, and this other guy was like, "Oh, I've got five." And I was like, "All right, good for you, man." And then, you know, this other guy was saying, you know, a lot of people, they think if they are having problems, oh, well, we're going to have a kid and that's going to fix everything. You're a fool. If you're already having problems and you have a kid, you can just forget about it. You got to fix the problems first, because a kid is going to do nothing but come between you. Literally. Those first few weeks, I mean, they are sleeping in between you. There is no intimacy. All of a sudden, you've got little ones climbing all over you, and there's not as much time for just the two of you anymore. If we're not careful, we're not focused. Children can very easily come between a husband and a wife. You would think it wouldn't be that way, because they are literally a part of both of you, and you love them, but they take up a lot of time. And maybe it's intimacy. Maybe it's things that we talk about. Maybe it's not enough. Maybe we have different goals. Maybe we don't understand each other and how we communicate. Maybe there's an issue like we talked about last week with adultery. All these kinds of things pose threats. We have to work. We have to develop the habit of work, because these problems will inevitably arise in some form or fashion. Because guess what? Men and women are different. God made them that way for a reason. And we'll also say this, that ultimately, it also comes down to sin. Right? Marriages are broken because sin has led to a broken world. And oftentimes, specific sins within the marriage. I want us to note, back in Genesis chapter 3, the curses on man and woman that are placed after the fall. Genesis chapter 3, verses 16 through 19. To the woman, God said, "I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing, and in pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." And to Adam, he said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return." God cursed the man and the woman here. But what he said there, it's all because of sin. But what does he say? He says specifically to the woman, your desire will be for your husband and he shall rule over you. Why is it so difficult? Why is marriage so difficult? Sin. You know, sin always leads to bad consequences. God cursed Israel when they failed to follow his commands. Why do we think it's going to be any different with marriage? Marriages fail in part due to a failure of fulfilling or mixing up gender roles. You look at passages such as 1 Timothy chapter 2 and 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and Paul explains some of these things. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 through 15, Paul there writes, let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or exercise authority over man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. So there are roles. There is order. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. Yet she will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. What happened? What happened in the garden? The woman usurped her role. And that created a problem. Therefore, here he says in verse 14, Adam was not deceived, but the woman. This is all because of sin. Marriages fail in part because the same thing happens. Right? The same thing that happened in the garden. When the man isn't doing his job, and he isn't leading, and then the woman steps in and she takes the lead, and doesn't do what she's supposed to do, and there's chaos. Things start falling apart because people aren't fulfilling their proper roles. We are not independent, but we are dependent on one another to do what God has called us to do. Furthermore, we read 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. I want you to understand the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. And then further down in verse 11. Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman. We have to, what does that say? It says we have to work together. We each have roles to play. But that's hard. Why? Because of the curse. In verse 16, going back to Genesis 3 and verse 16, it says her desire will be for her husband. What does that mean? Well, really, it means against. It means against her husband. In the word there means a violent craving or an intention to devour. She will want to overwhelm her husband. That's what the word means. She's going to have this desire and she's going to have to curtail that. But yet she will be ruled over by him. Not dominated, but ruled over. He is the God-appointed leader of that family unit. And so there is an inherent struggle. Because men on their part fail to lead as they should, and women on their part want to take that. But that's not the way God designed it. And so it's not entirely in our natures for things to work this way. And so therefore it takes all the more effort for us to make it work. When a woman tries to subvert the authority and role of her husband as head of the household, which is what she's going to want to do. This is her curse. And when the husband fails to work, to lead his household, and to have a love for his wife as Christ loved the church, problems will inevitably arise within the marriage. There will inevitably be chaos. And yet these curses from sin, what should they do? They should make us look for help and turn back to God. Because bad consequences always make us seek answers in order to fix them. Just as they did in Israel in Deuteronomy 30, all these curses that God placed upon Israel, what was the point? It's that when you start to see these things happening, you're going to repent and you're going to turn back to God. Well, same thing. If I'm looking in my marriage and there's problems and I'm seeing that, what should it do? It should force me to look for answers to fix it. It should force me to turn back to God. It should force me to look to His Word and pray to Him and find some kind of wisdom to answer and to fix the problems that are going on. These curses are there for a reason. They are not just to make things more difficult. It's not just to make things awful. It's not just to punish us. No. Their purpose is to show us the right way. To show us that our own human way, our wisdom, does not work. We have to fulfill our roles by solving the problems in our marriages. So how do we do that? Well, if sin is the problem, the solution ought to be obvious. Remove the sin, and you remove the problems. If I'm trying to be a Christian, again, this is why so many people that are Christians have, you look around the world, who are the people that have the most successful marriages? They're people that are good Christians. Because why? Because they are being Christ-like. They're removing sin from their lives. And if you remove sin from your life, there are going to be a lot less problems. It's only logical. And that applies to your marriage. If I'm removing all these things, if I'm removing my selfishness, if I am removing my idolatry, if I am removing my lusts, if I am removing my pride, my marriage is ultimately going to benefit. If I fix sin, I'm going to fix problems. If there's something that's going on in my life that is wrong, that is affecting my marriage, just cut it out. And secondly, we need to appreciate the ultimate aim of the gospel, which is restoration. Well, if the gospel is all about restoration, what should be the, if there is a marriage, something going on in my marriage, and there's something between us, what should I do? I should try and restore it. You know, I talked about that last week. Like, what do we do? You get on your knees and you pray, and you go, and what else? You go and you seek counseling, and you go and you talk to your elders. And you seek counseling from them, and you read whatever books you need to read, and you figure it out. You ask them, your elders, to pray over you and help you so that you can be restored to each other and ultimately to God. Because guess what? If there's a problem in your marriage and you're separated from one another, there's a good chance you're going to be separated from God as well. But on the flip side, if you're trying to help one another in your marriage to get to heaven, if you are not living sinfully, if you are setting a godly example, then positive things are going to happen. I want you to turn with me, if you would, to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. Oh, sorry. Let me back up there. Got a little ahead of myself. Colossians chapter 3. And I want to read verses 9 through 24. But as we read this, these things are really talking about just, you know, the ways that Christians should live their lives, putting on the new self in Christ. But I want you to read these things in the context of marriage. I want you to think not just individual, but husband or wife. Marriage. Beginning in verse 9. Do not lie to one another. When you think about that in the context of marriage, I mean, That's going to go a long way, isn't it? Seeing that you put off the old self with its practices and put on the new self, which being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there is not Greek, Jew, circumcised, uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all in all. Put on then as God's chosen ones in your marriage, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, patience, bearing with one another. Think you're going to have to do that? And if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, you think you're going to have to do that? As the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you are called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in wisdom, singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Don't you think you should be worshiping together? I think that's going to go a little ways. And then he goes on to say, he takes that and he goes to the marriage relationship, right? In verse 18, he says, wives, submit to your husbands, as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Why? Verse 23, whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Right? Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. When you work, and you take responsibility for yourself, and you put in the effort, then you reap the rewards, not before. For you are serving the Lord Christ. Marriage is supposed to make us like Jesus Christ. But there is a lot of work involved in that. We're supposed to put on the new self. We're supposed to do all these things that he lists here. And when you put all of that we just read in the context of marriage, I think it really kind of brings it home, doesn't it? We have to add to our faith all these virtues that Peter talks about in 2 Peter chapter 1. And when we start doing that, we start living like a Christian, and if we're both doing that, it's going to make things a lot easier. So what do I say? Ideal man plus ideal women equals an ideal marriage. That means we have to be godly to one another. It's that simple. So that means men don't dominate. What does he say here? Do not be harsh with them, but love them in Colossians 3. Don't harass them. Don't boss them around. Don't underappreciate them. Don't be unfaithful to them. But do love and show that love. Learn your wife's love language. Everybody has different love languages, right? Figure out what it is and show it. Appreciate them. Be faithful to them. Treat them as your equal. Sacrifice for them. Women, don't try to rule. Don't nag. Don't forget how difficult it is to lead. But do submit. Do love. Do help him because Lord knows he needs it. Encourage his leadership. Support him. Apply fundamental qualities of discipleship. Commitment to Christ is going to help ensure success. I think too often we get caught up, well, here's the 9-step program to a successful marriage. Okay, well, your book might be great and all, but what does it really have to do with that? If we just decide, we get married and just decide, wow, I'm married, I better figure this out. We start looking for worldly methods or advice, it's probably already too late. The problem and solution lies not within the marriage itself, but the lives of the people in the marriage. Are they godly, committed Christians? Commitment to Christ is going to almost ensure success. And I mean real, not half-hearted, not fake, not sometimes, not whenever I feel like it kind of Christians, but real, committed Christians who are trying to be godly, who are trying to put on the new self, as we read here in Colossians 3. If you're doing all those things, it's going to almost guarantee that you are going to have the kind of marriage that God wants you to have, because you're going to be easy to love. You're going to be easy to live with. You're going to be easy to sacrifice for. If you are having the attitude of Christ that says, I'm going to deny myself and I'm going to take up my cross, I'm going to follow him. If you are committed to fulfilling your roles and your vows that you took because you're a Christian, you're a person of truth, it's going to ensure success. And why? Because what does commitment to Christ require? It requires loyalty, right? It requires loyalty. Matthew 16:24, denying self, taking up cross, and following him. And if you're doing that together, if you're both loyal to Christ, guess what? It's going to make it a whole lot easier to be loyal to one another. And if you are godly to one another, and again, Paul's treatise there in Ephesians 5, verses 22 through 33, about the marriage relationship. And we've all read that before, and how Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, as he set an example of self-sacrifice. If we are being godly, if we are being Christ-like, that means we're self-sacrificing in our marriage, putting the other person's needs and wants first. That's going to ensure success. If we have a unity of purpose, if we're following the same example, if we're being godly towards one another, how can you be angry at someone who's being godly towards you? And be loving. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43 through 48, Matthew 22, verse 39. Just be loving towards one another. Love one another, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Guess what? Love your neighbor as yourself applies. And that means loving them even when it's not easy. Because in a marriage, you don't always have to like each other. But you do have to love each other. Those are two different things. After that honeymoon starts to fade, what are you going to do then? Remember that Christ doesn't always like me. But he does still love me. And he gave himself up for me. He doesn't always like what I'm doing. But his blood still applies. And he calls me back to him. He calls me to reconciliation. What an example for us to see and to imitate in our marriages today. In this example of Christ, we love and give ourselves up for one another, even when it is not deserved. We need to be gracious with each other. That means giving each other space, giving each other chances. And we need to be merciful and patient and forgiving. We need to realize that in every marriage, there are inevitably going to be problems. Those problems often arise because of sin and selfishness and the curses that have been placed on man and woman because of the first sin. But those problems are not impossible to work past, as the world would have us believe. The world wants an easy button. But if we adopt an attitude of work, we can be successful. Marriages take work. We can solve the issues if we are willing to put in the work and apply godly principles to them and just be godly towards one another. Marriage can be one of the greatest, most fulfilling blessings in life if we choose to make it so. So this morning, let us help each other work towards that goal in this church in order to glorify God in our homes and in our marriages. This morning, we're about to partake of the Lord's Supper, and I think that really, it's really an apt time to apply these principles that we've talked about this morning, because the Lord's Supper is a time to remember Jesus Christ's sacrifice. It's a time to remember these baseline characteristics of God. It's a time to remember His example of humility and forgiveness and love and self-sacrifice. These qualities that ought to be present in our marriages. So this morning as we partake, let us think about these things. Thank you.